Hi, my name is James, I'm an alcoholic. First of all, I'll try and talk very slowly because you all have a funny accent. You may guess I'm not from this part of the world, although I was born in Birmingham, but not Birmingham, Alabama, the original Birmingham in the UK. But that's England. This is a Scottish accent, and that's because at an early age I moved to Scotland. But I'll talk about that in a second. I came here a few days ago in my own way to honour a man who meant so much to me, Rusty Jones. When I walked into here in October 2017, Rusty was one of those people who caught me on his newcomer's radar that we heard about the weekend. He tried to speak to me and he couldn't understand a word I said. I tried to speak to him and I couldn't understand the word he answered. We had a southern drawl and a Scottish accent, and they never actually worked at the beginning, but we still had something in common. We still had the same heart, the same desire. Mine was painful at that point, his was serene. And over the years, Rusty and I, over the months, Rusty and I started attuning to each other. I started understanding what he was saying. He started understanding what I was saying. And he became a very good friend and someone that I would not have wanted to miss his memorial service. So I came over for that, and we thought, when I'm here, why not do the speaker meeting at the same time? Because although I was here for over 3 years, I got sober here, I don't think I've ever told my story. And so even the people who know me well, I've probably pieced most of it together, but they've never actually heard me speak it in a formulated way. I've got a suit and tie on tonight. That's for two reasons. First of all, I was invited to a Jewish New Year dinner before I came here by one of my home group members who asked me to come along. And I've spent the past few hours in a room with three elderly ladies. The group member's not elderly, she would kill me if I said that, but about the same age as me. You know, there's a six in front of the number, and a young lady who had recently joined the Jewish faith. And I was reflecting upon that when I was driving over. I wouldn't have been invited to something like that a few years ago. You know, imagine being in a house with five women of mature age learning about the Jewish faith over dinner. It was an exciting opportunity and something that I will probably always cherish. And that's just a little story that AA has filled into my life. But I was thinking, when I was sitting 2 days ago, I was waiting for someone and I was in the car park, and it took me back to a day, the 3rd of October 2017, when I first sat in that car park. I have no idea how I ended up in that car park. We'll try and explore that in a minute. But I was in the car park. I'm going to use a little bit of poetic license, because I can't tell you if what I'm going to share now all happened in the same day, or maybe over a period of a few weeks. But I'll tell you my car park story. So I'm sitting in a car. First of all, a car drives in, and if I remember rightly, it was a convertible Lexus. And out steps a gentleman with, looked like he was going to the golf. He had golf trousers on, a golf shirt on. He was clutching two boxes of Dunkin' Donuts, if I remember, and he walked into the hall. A few seconds later, an old junker of a car draws up. A lady of mature years, with her hair all lovely and a cravat round her neck, stepped out the driver's side, and out the passenger side, this old guy kind of fell out the car. He was wearing a fedora hat and what I learned to be later to be called a bolo around his neck, and he shuffled out of the car into the meeting. I'd noticed when I was parking there was a young lady in a car. It was her home. I didn't know that till later when I spoke to her, but it was full of all of her worldly possessions, and she was sleeping in Walmart car park, coming to meetings and trying to get sober. I heard a loud New York accent coming from the pagoda, very loud, laughing and joking. And that turned out to be another lady that I got to know in here, who had came from New York and found her way down here and got sober. A few moments later, a lady gets out of a car and she glides across the car park, and she's on her phone speaking in a Bluetooth, one of those old Bluetooth things. I noticed she still got it actually, she had it yesterday. And she's talking away. She looked like Cruella de Vil with a big white part in the hair. You may know who I'm talking about. And she came into the meeting. Then an electric BMW pulls up. I like cars, obviously. An electric BMW pulls up, and a tall lady dressed in leotards and PT clothes, with this big, massive bunch of curly hair, clutching the biggest water bottle I've ever seen. She walks into the meeting. Just after that, a red Ferrari pulls in, purring away, parks up. And this chap gets out and walks in to the meeting. I thought, what the hell am I doing here? Right? What the hell am I doing here? And it went through my mind that who are these people? There's every walk of life coming into this building. And then a correctional bus arrives, and about 20 odd people pile out of this prison bus or jail bus, whatever it is you guys call it. And I'm really now thinking, what the hell has my life come to? But something made me walk into this room. Something made me come into that meeting. Now, I have used poetic license. I don't think they all happened the same day, but it's a good story. But these people saved my life. All those people I've spoken about had a big part in taking me from the wreck that I was that day to the guy who's standing in front of you today. So I have a suit on because I was out earlier on today, but also we are told in Scotland when you speak, you dress becomingly, because the book says so. And the book's important, and we should listen to what the book tells us. I say that, but I'm no student of the book. You know, my old sponsor from America is sitting in this room right now, and he'll probably know that. He'll probably tell you, I struggle to read the book. But when I do read it, it's extremely insightful, and I love when I hear people who are scholars of it and they explain it to me in more detail. But that day in the car park, when I walked in these doors, I'm going to expand upon that when I come back to my recovery. So let's park the 3rd of October 2017 for a minute, and let's go back to March 1962, when a little boy was born in Birmingham, United Kingdom, to a mother who was a promising ballerina and who gave up her career because to have a child, and a father who was a civil engineer. We were destined for what England calls a middle class lifestyle, which basically means you've got a little bit of money and you got a good education. But my father died when I was two. He died of TB, tuberculosis. I don't remember this, of course, I was two. My mother remarried. Within about a year, she remarried a Scottish guy. And that guy was to become my stepfather. And in the ensuing years, three more sons were born. And I became one of four. I was the oldest brother of four. For 10 years, we lived down in Somerset in England. And I call that, in my home group, they call me Butterfly Boy. Because I told a story once about being a young man, young boy, 10 years of age, chasing butterflies in Somerset. It's the only childhood memory I've got that I like. I have no other childhood memories I like. I remember being in Somerset. I loved living in Somerset. My grandmother, which we called Nan, my Nan lived there. I lived with my Nan and my grandpa quite a lot, and I really enjoyed that part of my life. I seem to be living in Enid Blyton, you know, land, if anyone knows that author. But then my dad, my stepfather, when I was in the age of 10, came back. He went to Scotland for his brother's wedding, which is about 450 miles from Somerset. Went to his brother's wedding, and my stepfather discovered, I'll call him my dad discovered all his drinking buddies. Unknown to me, for many years, my dad had an alcohol problem, and he'd escaped it by a geographical to Somerset. But the minute he got back into Scotland and he was surrounded by his family and friends, he started drinking heavily again. And he phoned my mum and said, get your backside, that wasn't the word they used, but get your backside and the children up to Scotland, we are moving here. In those days, a wife did what the husband told her to do. And my mum took 3 kids at that stage to Scotland. And suddenly I was thrust into hell. Hell. And it was a horrible childhood from that point onwards. My father was extremely violent towards me. He was extremely mentally torturous towards me. And life was terrible. At the age of 16, I started college. And I went to the college Christmas event. And I stole alcohol from the student union. And I got really drunk. And I got through out of college. For that and a few months after that, I got a job in a bingo hall, a dead end job in a bingo hall, and I went to a night out, and in that night out, I'm just over 16 a couple of months, too young to drink, and I went to this nightclub, and at the time, some of you may be old enough, not many of you, John Travolta, Saturday Night Fever in Greece was in the charts, and I had my first real drink that night. And I was on my back with my touching my knees with my hand, and I was doing all the Grease and Saturday Night Fever dancing, and I became a totally different person that day. The frightened, insular boy who never had a friend at school, who spent his whole life looking up in the sky at aeroplanes, that's all I ever wanted to be, was a pilot. Suddenly he becomes this party guy. You know, that woman sat on my knee in the minibus going home. I went into her house, her husband was upstairs sleeping, and I won't tell you the rest of the story. But about 6 months later, her husband caught me, beat the living daylights out of me, and she got divorced and I moved in. Not even 17. In between that period, moving in, I was living in a shed in the back garden on top of an old mattress. And when the husband would go to work in the morning, I would go in the house. Because my first wife, who she became, was also a heavy, heavy drinker. So suddenly drink was taking everything away from me. I'd walked out of my parents' house, I'd left college because of it, I'm now living in a shed at the bottom of a garden, I'm having an affair with a married woman, and then she gets pregnant. And I'm now 18, with a 36-year-old partner, drinking every day, and we got through out of that house, and we ended up in a homeless hotel. The government paid for us to stay in that hotel. And I discovered drinking in old men's bars, and I was actually always quite clever, so I was able to figure out how to work the social security system in the UK. And suddenly I'm now sitting with a table and a desk in the bar, giving people advice on how to best claim social security money, how to scam the system is the best way to describe it. And I'm getting free beers for that, and people like me. I've now got a purpose in life. I didn't know I was an alky. I'm drinking and these people like me. That's what life was all about. I could go on here for a long, long time about what happened in those days, but that's a story on its own. But I had my baby. I tried to do what I thought was best. I tried to get a job. I got a job in a Best Buy type company, and I figured out it was for some reason you could easily just walk out the back door with a TV, and you could cash for it. You didn't have to put it through the register. You know, and that seemed a good idea. That seemed a good idea to help feed this baby. And I got caught. I got caught and went. I went to the holding jail, whatever you call it, for a day or so. That was the only time I really went in jail for that one day. And then I had to go to the High Court in Glasgow. And I tell you, I've never been so scared. Never been so scared. But something looked after me that day, and something enabled that judge to give me a chance, and he gave me a suspended sentence. So I got home and I said, okay, I need to sort my life out. I got a job as a van driver for an IT company, and I figured out something. Computers, some of you won't know this, remember this, but there was no computers on desks when I was a youngster, some of your ages. Computers first came on desk in 1983, the IBM PC, and I was there when that happened, and I loved technology. And I said to my boss, hey, why don't we sell computers? And he said, oh, okay, if you can make a go of it, then I'll give you some funding. Within a couple of years, I was a sales director, followed up by managing director of a small IT company in Glasgow, which grew. The world was at my feet. I was making lots and lots of money at an early age. I've got a baby at home. By that time, my ex-wife had got access, I got custody of her daughter, who she lost because of me. When they went to court over the divorce, the husband said, she's living with a boy. And that was the end of her, you know, child, having her child. But we got the child back, and there was my own daughter and my stepdaughter and my wife, and we're living an okay life. But then James is 26, and James realises, hang on, I'm 26 and she's coming on for 40. I'm married, two young kids. I've got a lot of money. I'm doing well. You know, I've got a nice car. And I decided that it was best if I left them and moved on out on myself, because I was just a hindrance to them. You know, I'll go out and do something else. So I left her. I left my two children. I said I would come and see them every week. We'll tell you about that in a minute. But anyway, I promised faithfully I would always see my children, or my daughter and my stepdaughter. Money was rolling in. Life was good. I rented a penthouse apartment in the best place I could in the local city. Just lived this bachelor life. A young lady came to work for us, and she was only married a year. She was 21, and she was getting slapped about by her husband. And I took pity on her, and the next minute she's wife number two. She was a biker chick, unknown to me at the beginning. So suddenly I'm a managing director by daytime, and by night time I'm standing in a bar being a bouncer on the doors, a doorman. So doorman at night, managing director by day. Good combination. Why? It wasn't about money, it was about belonging to something. We don't have Hell's Angels in Scotland, because Hell's Angels never made it in Scotland, because we're too tough for Hell's Angels. So we have an accommodation called the Blue Angels, where the Hell's Angels met with the Scottish bikers, and they formed this thing called the Blue Angels. I'm now doing the accounts for the Blue Angels. Right? Now that money's coming from sources I don't want to know about, but I'm doing the accounts because it gives me a belonging into something again. And it's alcohol fueled. Yeah, and it's just a horrible way of living. Eventually she throws me out. How dare she? But eventually she throws me out, and not before we had another kid together, and I've got three daughters now, and I'm now back out. And we always say in Scotland about, we have black refuse bags, plastic bags that you put the junk in and then you put out into the trash can. And some of us talk in our meetings about walking around with the bin bag. It's a common thing in Scotland to see the Alkies with a bin bag. That means a trash bag, we call them bin bags. That means you've been thrown out of the house. Yeah. So I'm back out now, I'm managing director, and I'm a bouncer, remember? I'm a friend of the angels, and I'm carrying two bin bags, and I'm out of the house. I go and stay with a friend, and I sleep in a young baby's room, covered in little girly kiddie things all over the walls, you know, and I don't know, some kind of duvet that's got up long stockings or something on it, you know, some kiddies' pictures on it. I'm living in there, and I'm driving my fancy car to work every day. And on a Friday night, I remember one occasion, it was a Friday night, I was meant to see my daughters, and they were about 16 miles away. And I remember leaving work one night, and someone saying to me, fancy a pint, James? Of course, Friday night, let's have a pint, been a hard week. We went to the pub for the pint, and I thought, traffic's bad, city traffic, same as here. I'll have another one to wait for the traffic to disappear. May as well have another one because it's still going to be busy. And then before I know it, I'm too drunk to go and even attempt to see my daughter, knowing that when I got there, my wife would have slammed the door in my ex-wife would have slammed the door in my face. That's one example of powerlessness. I knew I was picking up two little kiddies. I knew those kiddies were going to be at the door waiting for me because we had a whole weekend arranged. We're going to go to the skating, we're going to go to the pictures, we're going to go to, you know, something to eat, all the things we had arranged. But more important to me was having a pint. One pint. Because, you know, we can't have one pint. Just one example of the soul-destroying things that happened, you know, when you had that family breakup like that. So, yeah, this life's over. The biker community disappears because they sided with my ex-wife, and I was in fear of my life, genuinely, you know, because these were really mental people. So I go off and I decide to enroll in college again. I leave the job I've got, basically. No, I kind of left it before I got sacked. I've never been sacked. I always say that, I've never been sacked. It was good timing. I always knew when to leave, right? But never got sacked. I left that company. I decided to be a student. I thought, that's a good idea, be a student. You know, finish off that degree that I was entitled to get. because I was clever enough, but things had went against me, you know, in life. So I'll go back to college. Oh, and I'm in college now, and I'm a student, and I'm 33 or something like that, 32, 33 years of age, and I'm in college, and I've got no wife, kids that I'm forgetting about every day, and I'm just living the party life at college. I rent an apartment again, and I meet another lady, and she wouldn't mind me saying this, and I know she doesn't, because we talk about this. I meet another lady who had an alcohol problem, and she became wife number three. And I'm really proud that my wife is celebrating 19 years sobriety this year. She got it. She got it. She got it. She went to rehab and she got it. But it's not her story, so I won't talk about that much. I met this lady, and we always say that the reason why we were never attracted to each other, we didn't have any love. It was a mixture of lust and a wine cabinet. And it was the two things went hand in hand, you know, and that was that relationship that was really bad at the beginning. We fought. We had, you know, constant arguments, and then we would just have a drink and then fall each other's arms again. It was that kind of relationship. And ultimately, and my career took off again. You know, I managed to get back into a decent job again, and things started. I sort of left the IT kind of, and I moved into cyber security, and I went through the ranks there. Did okay financially, did okay money wise. But my wife and I. One of the most indignant things that ever happened to us was that in Scotland, if you can't pay your bills, they fit a coin meter in your house, and you have to put in pound coins. We have pound coins, we have paper dollar, we have pound coins. You have to feed this meter for the electric to come on if you're not trusted to have a credit account. Now I was a partner designate at one of the big firms. And I'm putting coins in a meter, right? Because the money I'm earning is just going. Now, it wasn't all going on direct alcohol, but what I needed was people. I needed to be loved. I needed to have people around me. I didn't understand that until I got sober, and I will talk about that when I come to recovery in a few minutes. I didn't understand how much I needed love and people, so I would buy loving people. I would have all this big money coming in, and I don't mean any of this in a boasting way, it's my story, and that money would be spent on people. I would think nothing of giving people money. See, if they told me a sob story that they can't pay their rent, there you go. Right? My car's got no MOT, no tax on it, there you go. Right? Money was going, and I can't pay my own bills. I got a guy to come and fix the meter for me, so that basically slowed the meter down in the electric, right? So that I could get cheaper meter. Right? I'm a director of a big accounting firm, right? And this is the life I'm living. Yeah. I'm driving a car that's not legal. It was acquired by someone for me. Yeah. It's got dodgy paperwork. And I'm a director of a large accounting firm, global big firm. Yeah. I keep saying that for a reason, because this is a guy who's theoretically got it all. But I had nothing. And I was dead. My wife will tell you that I used to have fish eyes. She called them dead fish eyes. It's like a fish lying on a plate, you know, in the Atlanta fish market. It's just lying there, these black eyes that have got no soul behind them. See, I've got bonny blue eyes. I'm getting a bit older now, but I used to be a bit of attractive bonny blue eyes. The ladies loved it. But I've got these black eyes deep down inside. And I'm living this really weird life. We did some geographicals. We went to live in London. We then went to live in Poland. I thought Poland was a good idea until I realised the Polish people drink more than any other country on this planet, in my opinion. Right? The Scottish accent is lovely if you're young and chasing ladies. It's a curse when you don't want to drink, because the first thing people say to you is, would you like a whiskey? You're from Scotland, you must love malt whiskey. I never liked that stuff. It was rank. I'd rather have Jack Daniels. It was much better. But anyway, we're not talking about alcohol then. So, we're in Poland, and all the same behaviours are there. I'm breaking every vow I've made. I'm breaking all the marital vows. I'm breaking decency, breaking rule. I'm just not a nice person. But I know deep down inside me there's a nice person. I know that. But I can't be that person. We then decide that we're going to have another. We're going to give it another. We split up a couple of times. We're going to have another go. And I'd always wanted to come to America. When I was a child, my vision of America, and I was young, when I had all these family problems and violence in my upbringing, Happy Days was on television. The Fonz, Richard Cunningham. Yeah. And what used to happen in America? I don't know if it still does, maybe you can tell me. These young guys and girls would go along to this lovely ice cream parlour, bar thing, they'd all park their car outside, because they all had cars. They were only about 16, 17. And every guy got a blonde with blue eyes, free. That was part of the deal. Right? And if you were a football guy, you get the best blonde with the blue eyes. I always like blondes for some reason. But anyway, that's another story for another day. That was America to me. America was this place. I loved space and I loved aviation, so this is the place. America, rockets, aviation, men in the moon. I came to America. It's all going to be different. When we go to America, honey, I promise you, this is going to be the fresh start I need. I'm on the airplane flying over. My wife is three seats behind me because we couldn't get seats together. And the cabin crew lady said to me, "Love your accent, sir. Where are you from?" And I said, "Scotland." She goes, "Oh, I guess that." She says, "It's lovely." And she says, "Where are you going to be? Where are you going to America for?" I said, "I'm moving to America for a few months. I'm going over there to work for a few months." "Where are you going?" I said, "Atlanta." She goes, "Hey, I live in Atlanta. Maybe we could hook up one night." And I did say, "You maybe need to ask her if that's okay." And my wife said, "Take him." But anyway. And that was to happen when I got to America. I found that when I first got here, I'm going to the bars and everyone's loving the Scottish accent and people are buying me drinks. And I'm feeling king of the castle. James is in his element again. His ego was landed. Because I had one hell of an ego. Maybe that's coming out tonight, but I hope it's not coming out in a bad way. But I had one hell of an ego. It was getting worse. I promised once that I would never drink and drive, and of course I did. Many, many years I was drinking and driving, some very long distances as well. 200 or 300 mile drives, drunk, coming from London back to Scotland and after business meetings. My dream was always to be a pilot and have a pilot's license, and I got that. Was over here at the cab, and three friends from Ireland came over. I took them flying. We didn't stop drinking until about 3 o'clock in the afternoon, and I took them flying about 5 o'clock. And I flew over the top of the big stadium, and I looked down and it was full of people. You're not allowed to do that. If anyone knows anything about flying, you're not allowed to fly over the top of a stadium when it's full of people. So the next thing is I realised there's probably going to be a couple of F-16s up my backside from Dobbins. So I managed to get away. But now I'm flying drunk, flying an aeroplane drunk. I forgot to tell you, and I shouldn't have forgot, but way back in that story, when I was an MD and I was a bouncer, I got a brand new car. Sports car. Nice car. I took it home that Friday night, went drinking, went to the nightclubs. 4 o'clock in the morning I left the nightclub. Went home, got showered, changed, got back in the car to go and pick up my friend and take him to the gym. I used to be fit back in those days. Take him to the gym, and it was 7 o'clock in the morning, and I knocked down. I ran over someone. I ran over a bum. I ran over a guy who lived under the bridge. He died. They couldn't breathalyse me because I was in shock. And in the hospital they took blood, but they didn't do it properly, so the evidence was contaminated. And the policeman came to my door nearly a year later and said to me, "Basically, you know what you did. We can't prove it, the case is closed." Killed a man. Was I drunk? I'll have to live with that for the rest of my days. Am I okay with it now? No, I'm not okay with it, but I can live with it now because you've taught me how to do that. I said that because that's another big part I wanted to bring up, how it takes us. I'm in America now, and I heard about Oktoberfest in Helen. I thought that sounds like a good idea. So off I go to Helen, 30th of September 2017. I know that because there's pictures of me in a real mess that people took. 30th of September 2017, up to Helen, took my wife with me. She didn't want to go, but I forced her to go. I didn't force her, but she came with me. And I got a last minute motel that the bed had more dirt on it inside than the floor did. My feet were sticking to the floor as we walked about. My wife was crying. The door was hanging off its hinges. There was a Hell's Angel, real Hell's Angel party going on downstairs. And I think, this is brilliant. I said, "Don't worry about the bed. I'll be too drunk to know what it's like anyway." She's sober. She's at that time 8 years sober or something. Yeah, they had that night out. I don't know what the hell happened. I don't know what happened on the 1st of October. I don't know what happened on the 2nd of October. I have no idea. 3 days, I have no idea what's happening. Now, I wasn't sitting banging the drum saying I need to stop drinking. I didn't think I needed to stop drinking. I knew there was problems in life. But see all those things I talked about? They weren't eating me up. They weren't making me... And people talk about how they were banging themselves and they needed to get sober. I never felt that. But something happened on the 3rd of October when I woke up that morning. Something happened, and I call it my burning bush moment. Something happened that day that I walked into the bedroom. I've been sleeping in the bath for some reason. I woke up that day and I said, I'm going to go to AA. And I found my way here to that car park we talked about at the beginning of this meeting. I found my way here. I've no idea why. This isn't even the nearest place to where I was living at the time. But whatever happened, I ended up here. And I can't tell you why I ended up here. I can't tell you if I phoned up someone. I can't tell you if I looked up an online directory. All I know is I ended up at a place called Nava. And I walked in these doors. And I don't remember anything about that day. I can't tell you who was in the room. I can guess who was there because it's the usual 1:30 crowd that was there nearly every day for the next 3 years that I was here. But, and did I get hope? I have no idea. People tell me, oh, I remember my first meeting. It was John and it was William that were talking at the top table, and I got hope. And I walked out of there knowing my life was going to... I don't remember any of that stuff. Right? All I know is I came back. I was probably told to do 90... I was told, but I don't remember who told me and when. Someone told me to do 90 meetings in 90 days. And I've got a vague recollection, and people told me I said something along the lines of, I can't do 1990 because I'm a global executive of an international company and I have to go backwards and forwards to Europe all the time on business trips, so I can't do it. I think I did 300 meetings in 90 days. You know, I said it, but I didn't act it. I stayed here and I found this place had meetings at 7:30, at 9:30, at 11, what is it, 11:30, 1:30, 5:45. There was meetings every day, loads of them, and I lived in this place. I lived in it. And one time I tried to calculate, and I think I got to 300 meetings in 90 days or something like that. I done what you told me to do. I sat there and I listened, and I talked crap. You know, I was still full of, you know, I still am full of crap. You can probably tell that already, right? But that's me. Yeah, I'm quite a gregarious person. But anyway, I sat in that room, and the pink fluffy cloud came, and my life was wonderful. And then my visa was about to run out, and I had to go back to the UK. And I do remember crying in that all night, though. I remember crying because I was so frightened of going back to the UK. Because I still hadn't figured out at that point that the problem was me. It wasn't all the guys in Scotland that made me drink. It wasn't the guys who said, here, have a drink, you dafty. Right? What do you mean you're sober? Have a drink. You know? It wasn't those guys. It was me. I had the power to go back to Scotland. My higher power, that I still don't understand what my higher power is to this day. And in 10 days time or so, as long as I can breathe and my higher power looks after me, I'll be 8 years sober. But I still don't understand what my higher power is. I accept it. I have a rough concept, but I don't know what it is. I looked around, I came in and I saw God and I thought, oh God, and I didn't know, that's a bit funny, isn't it? Oh God, when you don't believe in God. But anyway, I thought, oh God, no, it's a religious thing, this. Can't cope with this. I'm an atheist. Maybe I'm an agnostic. I don't know what I'm. Agnostic's good because then you can go both ways. Atheists. What? There is something, you're going to get thrown out. I'm in here. I'm listening, but I'm also not listening at times. But I've had enough to keep me here and for the changes to slowly start happening. My visa was was going to be finished. I was going to have to go back to the UK. I was frightened of going back to the UK. I cried next door. I remember that day. I remember being really upset that day. And then my boss came over from Dublin. I work for a Dublin based company. He came over and he said to me, we had a meeting in some place, and he said, you've stopped drinking totally. I said, yeah. I didn't tell him about you. I said, yeah, I have. He said, you know, he said, your colleagues, you know, I've noticed you're actually a decent guy, you're alright, people are getting on well with you, there's good things being said about you back at head office. You know, you're putting in some good stuff. You know, you're getting some good clients. Things are going quite well. Maybe you should stay. It was words to that effect. Right? And I said, I can't stay. My visa's running out. I don't have a visa. I can't stay. And he said to me, what if the company sponsors you for a business visa? Now, a business visa lasts for 3 years. And they did. They sponsored me. And I got a business visa. And I came back into that room and I was ecstatic. And I was telling everyone through tears and bubbling and snotters and everything, I was telling them all that I'm going to be able to stay. I'm going to be able to stay. I'm going to be able to keep this sobriety going. And that's what happened. That's what happened. And I just lived inside. I didn't just live in AA in the sense that nothing else happened. After about, I think it was about 6 months, I need to speak to my old sponsor about that. I think it was about 6 months, maybe less than that. I didn't go doing my old job for a while, because my old job involved taking clients out for drinks. I had a pretty much unlimited expense account, and my job was taking clients out drinking, wining and dining them, taking them to ladies' bars, taking them across straight lines sometimes where there was places you couldn't get across the other side of the state, you know, stuff like that. I couldn't live in that world, of course, when I'm trying to get sober. But eventually I was able to live in that world. I was able to go to those things and not partake, not do those things, and live a different life. I was able to say to my colleagues, you take the guys off to the ladies' bar. Yeah, I'm going to bed, you know, type of thing. I was able to do that kind of thing. It was tough, it was hard, but I was able to do it, and life got better. And in 2020, we ended up going back to Scotland, and I was a bit frightened of that. We went back just before COVID, and literally days before COVID, 3 days before COVID, we went back to Scotland, and the whole world changed. We got locked down, and I'm worried. And my sponsor said to me something along the lines of, when you get over, I'll always be your sponsor. He said to me, at the very beginning when he was my sponsor, he said something along the lines of, I'm not your lawyer, I'm not your doctor, I'm not your taxi driver, I'm not your money lender, I'm not your friend. Although I might become your friend. And he did. He's a friend. And I hope he'll always, I know he'll always be a friend for the rest of my life. But anyway, he said to me, hey look, I'll always be your friend, I'll always be your sponsor. Worse to that effect, you know, I'm paraphrasing again. He said, when you go to Scotland, the best thing for you to do is get a sponsor over there. I think he said to me, get someone that can look you in the eyes, because you know they'll pull shit. I think he said that. I mean, verify that with him, but I've always told people he said that anyway, so it's true as far as I'm concerned. And I did. I went over there. Well, I didn't actually. I went over there, and I'm still worried about Scotland, and I'm still worried about my sobriety, and I'm still worried how I'm going to manage sobriety in Scotland. And I had lots of tools, and you told me all the good stuff, and I knew it all. But for some reason, I loved the way you do AA in America. And I thought the way that we do it in the UK is crap. That's what I thought. Not how I think today. I still prefer American AA, but British AA is just as good. But there's a little bit of a difference sometimes. And it was interesting, someone said to me today about that, and I'll finish that in a minute. So because COVID lockdown happened, we all needed Zoom meetings, and I'm an IT guy. So what did I do? I set up the 130 NABA Zoom meeting, and I ran it from Scotland. And for the next year or so, I ran the NABA 130 group from Scotland. It was 6:30 in the evening for me, but that was great. I could still be part of my people. I could still sit here with all my people who knew me, who loved me, and I loved them. And that got me my first year under my belt, maybe a bit longer, I think. I also set up another meeting at the time. I remember it was called it Global Sober, I think it was called, or something. And the plan was something that I could do to have my Scottish AA guys and my American AA guys and have a new meeting of our own that would be on Zoom, theoretically forever. That didn't happen, but we started running that as well. And I was getting my American AA dose on a daily basis. But then that came to an end, and I had to start thinking about local stuff. Now, by this time, I'm now 5 years sober, something like that, and I'm not going to meetings in Scotland. I'm not going to meetings. And then eventually I did. Eventually I realised I was going to fall by the wayside if I didn't go to meetings. I didn't feel like drinking, but I just knew that I was getting tetchy. My wife was saying, do you know why I go to a meeting? I always know when there's things wrong in my family. My wife says to me, you know, there's not a wee meeting on tonight. That just means that I've been crabbit. That's a Scottish word you've all learned, crabbit. Right? Crabbit means annoying and pissed off. Yeah. So when I'm being crabbit, my wife tells me to go to a meeting, and I usually do. But I got into over there. I joined a group over there. I got my sponsor over there, and I started taking a part in AA in Scotland. It's different. It's different because I'm looking for differences. I love the way we have discussion groups here. We don't have many of them there. It's nearly always people telling their story, followed by a room sharing on that person's share. But it's great. I've got lots of friends now, and I decided that I would try and do some service, and this isn't about blowing my trumpet, this is about putting something back in. I'm currently the secretary for the intergroup. I've just been put onto the, I've been voluntold, as we say, I'm now on the committee for the Scottish Convention, region secretary, nominee. I'm going to be doing that from November onwards. I'm a GSO in down in England. I'm going to be the regional representative for the questions for the council, for GSO. So I'm trying to do service. We had an old guy in the meeting, and I'll kind of probably finish about now, but with a guy in the meeting called Willie. He was a bit like Rusty. He was like a Scottish Rusty. So Willie said to me one day, he was dying of cancer. He would come to meetings every time he could. He was dying of cancer. He was in a bad way. And Willie said to me one day, come here you, because that's how we speak to each other in Scotland. Come here you. So I said, what is it, Willie? He said, you're into all that business stuff, aren't you? You do lots of meetings and stuff, and you know how to write things and stuff. I said, yeah, good. We need you to do service. We need you to go through the structure. We need people like you to do that. Promise me you'll do that. And I couldn't tell a man who was dying of cancer. Oh, I don't know. I said, yeah, sure, Willie, I will. And now I'm trying to keep that promise to that man who gave so much to this fellowship, just like this man Rusty Jones did as well. Yeah, that's my fellowship for me. It's pervasive in my life now. My life is not built around AA, but AA is the foundation of it. I've got such a loving relationship with my wife now, and my dog, and my family members. I'm the patriarch of the family now. Everyone else is dead apart, I'm the oldest. And they, I don't say they look up to me, but they come to me for advice, and they come to me for help. My stepfather, who I hated growing up, this man who was violent towards me, I love him to bits now. The step told me to make amends. The step told me to look at things differently. The step told me to forgive. And I did, and I have. And I looked upon all of that. And my dad's now in his 80s, and I do call him Dad now. My wife and I look after him. We try and help him out as much as we can. You know, we've got a stable. We're stable financially. You know, and I used to sit with my sponsor and say, I don't know what I'm going to do when I retire. I'm so much in debt. I've got no money. When am I going to retire? I'm going to have to work until I'm dead. You know, type of thing. And things happened. Things happened in life. You know, that enabled me to have that lack of fear. You know, I don't have a fear of financial insecurity in it. Life is good. And life is good because I walked into that car park, and all those people that were totally different than me, I came in and joined them. They say in the book that people would never mix with. Well, I didn't think I would ever mix with some of the people I've met in here. The lady who was in the gazebo was called Dale. And Dale was a lady from New York who escaped the drug dealers who put guns to her head, and she came down here. And she became a bundle of laughter for me. I was sitting in that gazebo when I would just chuckle and laugh and doubled over. And that poor soul died a few years back as well. And then we lost Rusty Jones the other day. And I know you've all lost people. I've only lost two here that I know of. But I've also lost a few back in Scotland. I was over here on a visit a year or so ago, and the day my friend Rick, my Scottish sponsor Ricky, came with me. We were on the bus going to the aeroplane at the airport, and we got a call that young Simon had taken his life. Film producer. Everything to young guy, 20 something years of age, couldn't cope, killed himself. A few weeks later we found out about Steve, who had a very similar business background to mine, couldn't cope with it. He was a chief financial officer for a massive company. You know, Fortune 100 type company, chief financial officer, lost his job through alcohol, ended up back in his mother's spare bedroom and hung himself. People die in here. And all you have to do is pick that bloody book up and read it a bit better than me, but pick that book up. Realise that we can't take a single drink and it'll all fall apart again. Get that sponsor, get that person you can trust to help you get through those steps. Keep coming back, folks. Thanks for keeping me sober for one more day.
This is such a wonderful place where dead fish eyes turn into car park stories. Thank you for being part of that tonight, James. Tinsley is doing the chips.
Everybody, my name is Tinsley. I'm an alcoholic. Here at this meeting, we have a chip system to mark our time away from our last drink. If you'd like to try this way of life, one day at a time, we offer a white chip. Anybody want to pick up a white chip?
First I slip, and then I quit to a hope-filled dream. You rescue me, and finally, waking there I see. I look into love's window for a soul that's meant for me. Takes me where the promises all live. Sometimes quickly, sometimes slow, we get just what we need. On a broad highway, God for strife, we walk eternally. Take me where the promise is.